Welcome to the Home Building Hero, where we help you become the hero of your new home by providing you all the information that you need. No matter if you're an industry pro, you're building, or you're buying, we got you covered here at the Home Building Hero. We're coming to you live today from the LP Studios here in Wisconsin. I'm your host, David Bellman, president of Bellman Homes. Thank you for tuning in today. Today's topic is Frank Lloyd Wright's Inspiration to Architecture. All right, guys, if you've tuned in already, we have a two-part series here on the Frank Lloyd Wright Inspiration to Architecture. Part one we already published, so if you missed that, make sure you go back and check that out. But we talked a little bit about the person himself, interesting character indeed, certainly not a perfect person, but definitely a very talented and inspiring person to many in architecture, but definitely had maybe a few other issues in his life that were challenging. So if you want to hear more about that, make sure you listen into that one. But today's episode, we're really going to focus on his design principles and some of the elements and the things that he thought were important and core principles that he used when he created his architecture. And this is all kind of inspired me from my trip to Taliesin, Wisconsin. We saw his home and is also his drafting studio. So I got to experience not only a couple of his buildings, we got a tour, but also just got to get a feel for the person himself on this tour. So that's why we're sharing this. Hopefully you guys find this to be informative and a good podcast for you. So let's begin. Let's talk about Frank Lloyd Wright's design principles. One of his first principles that he really liked to incorporate in his designs was to bring the outdoors in. And so he was always kind of looking at ways to make those more seamless, so to speak. So he is very famous for the wall of windows where, you know, you have this really beautiful view and you position the house just properly to take advantage of that view. And then you put as much glass there as possible. The home I toured, I mean, I've never seen windows this far to the ceiling and floor. Now, building codes didn't really exist back then, so he's able to get away with it. But, you know, you would see these big glass panels that were literally, you know, 2 inches from the ceiling and 2 to 3 inches from the floor. And you would see these beautiful hillscapes, and it just felt like it was almost part of the room. He liked the corner glass, so he literally had the glass going corner to corner so you could have a full view of that space. That's part of bringing the outdoors in. The other thing that he did with some of the designs is he would, you know, maybe build a corner on the outside of the home that would kind of pull in part of the outdoor area, and then he would make something out of it. Like, for example, the one home I toured, he had a little garden there, and there was, you know, kind of a wall protecting it, but it was only like a half wall. So the sunlight and some more wind and air could come through, yet it still felt like a space that was enclosed, and yet you had these plants there that were growing that they probably used for food. So that was how he sort of brought the outdoors in to the home and the design of the house. Another thing that Frank Lloyd Wright really liked to do is use what's called the human scale. For him, he felt like the average human was 5'10" high. So he designed all his base buildings at a 5'10" scale. Now, I'm only 5'6", so walking through that building wasn't a big deal for me. And of course, if you know Frank Lloyd Wright, he didn't make everything the same height. He loved lots of different ceiling heights and angles and all sorts of things. So that was one of his principles, is to, you know, main hallway heights would be 5'10". And of course, if he had someone, this is the next principle, if he was designing for someone, he would design around their wants or needs. And when a lot of architects are like, no, this is how we do it, this is how it's supposed to be done, he was very much about the customer and about getting them what they want. So if he did have someone that was 6 foot, you know, he would joke that they're wrecking his scale. But yeah, he would then make everything a 6 foot scale. So he used scale, not in terms of I'm going to use quarter inch scale for my plans. No, it was I'm going to use human scale. So I'm going to base it around someone's height and go from there. So kind of an interesting concept. Another thing that he was really good with is what we call editing out the unnecessary. Now, that leaves a lot for interpretation, right? Because you know, if you've been through a Frank Lloyd Wright house, there's a lot going on. So for some people, they may say there's still a lot of unnecessary in here because there's almost too much going on. But yet at the same time, when you in one of these spaces that he designed and you start to look around, there's just a lot. There is a lot to take in. But at the same time, it just kind of all just kind of keeps adding to it. It doesn't feel like, why is that there? That just looks like crap. It's just kind of like, wow, there's just so much to take in. And your eye continues to kind of move around the design and look at the different spaces. So he was good at saying, okay, now this is something that we really don't need here. Anyway, he would take that out. So he was good at editing out the unnecessary and knew very well what to leave in and leave out. And I don't know how you train that skill necessarily, but that was definitely something that he just had. Now, the other thing that is a design principle that Frank Lloyd Wright used was the original vision. And having an original vision for whatever project he wanted to build. And he's got that famous architecture. It was shown and featured in Time magazine where it was built onto a waterfall, and the waterfall actually comes through the house. That was his original vision, is, again, bringing the outdoors in and incorporating the home around nature. So sticking to that original vision, no matter what challenges he faced and what, no matter how difficult or the different way, he always felt like there was always a way to build around it, but stick with the original vision. And a lot of people go, oh, that might be tough. Let's skip that. He did not believe that. And that's, I think, probably one of the most exceptional traits that he had. And as I alluded to in the previous comments, this is one of his biggest concepts as well when he's designing home, and that's shape the home with the site. And he believes in harmonizing with nature. And so he wanted to really work with the natural terrain. He wasn't a big believer in, you know, grading out the whole site just to get it to work a certain way. And I don't think back then he cared about, oh, I need to have this big flat area to play with the kids and that kind of thing. He wanted to use the natural beauty of the site and then work the home around it. So, for example, the home in Taliesin, he did not build this home on the top of the hill. He did not feel like a home ever belonged on top of the hill. It belonged as part of the hill so that you could enjoy the hillside. Now, in this day and age, you really can't do that because as I looked at this particular home, he built it into the hillside. Well, you've got these big swaths of hill coming down right into the foundation or around the main area of the home, which anytime you have rain, you know that water is going to go right into that structure. So there is a lot of little repair things and things going on with that home that, you know, with modern building codes and things like that, there's no way you could ever do that. So that's one of the things that I think, you know, made him interesting and exceptional is he never felt like the home had to be the primary feature. In fact, he always wanted, this is the next concept, that the home makes the landscape more beautiful. He didn't want it to stand out independent of the landscape. He wanted it to basically make the landscape more beautiful. So like when you drive by this home that's sitting on a hill, you know it's there, but it's not like, oh, wow, look at the home on the top of the hill. It's more like, oh, that's just part of it. It was meant to be there. So almost kind of like when you watch like a sci-fi movie and you see like these alien planets and it just sort of looks like these things are just sort of built into the, you know, the features of the land. That's exactly like what he was trying to do. And it's a very interesting concept. He also believed as a principle that architecture is life. So as part of incorporating nature into his design, he did a couple things that were very interesting. One was that he liked to use those native materials from the area in his home. So he used a lot of that Lannan stone outcropping, and there's a lot of it in the area. So, I mean, there's a couple things that make sense. One is that, you know, again, this was built in the early 1900s. You didn't get product from all across the country. It was not easy to do. And so you wanted to use material that was from nearby, but that also enhanced the beauty of the project when you're using things that already feel like they belong, or you see them in another area nearby. It just sort of feels like it's an extension of the area. And so while most people, when they first put up Lannan stone, they would put it up very flat and tight, he didn't do that. He wanted to replicate what he saw in nature. So what he did was pulled out stones and in spots, just like he would see it, you know, along a natural cleft or valley where you would have that Lannan stone. You would see some pieces of stone sticking out further than others as it broke off or crumbled down. He wanted that same concept in his home designs. And so he wanted to replicate nature. Even on his home, he had a cedar shake roof on it. Now, obviously, cedar shake is not necessarily the most durable material, but as you looked around the property, there sure were a lot of cedar trees there at one point, so that became the material for his roof. So again, he's using the products in the area and the things that you would find in the area to harmonize more with nature. And so that's really something that he liked as a design principle. He also believed in design with purpose. And what I mean by that is that each room and each space should have a specific purpose, and you want to design it with that in mind. So you don't just put rooms in to put rooms in. And of course, he always believed that his building was never done. That is actually another concept that he had. My building is never done. But he would always be adding on as the needs and the changes in his life or his family evolved. He would evolve the home with it. He was constantly tinkering. And, you know, your building's not done until you move on to the next one, was his concept. But the design with purpose. For example, in this home that we looked at, going into this very large family room, he had this very big room. Obviously, it had a volume ceiling in it, but there was sense of space within this large room. So, for example, he had this kind of lower ceiling on the edge of the room. That's where he put all the seating, and that was the purpose. It was to sit there so you could kind of have a conversation circle. There was a fireplace off to the side, and that had a purpose. That was sort of a separate gathering area. Then as he expanded the building, you could kind of walk around the back corner where that lower ceiling was, and there was more glass, and that was just a spot that you could watch the birds and enjoy the view. So each of these had little purposes, even had a little nook off to the one side where they built a table in, and that was an area where you could eat. And it just was really neat because although it was a big room and it was very open, it had a sense of purpose. So he loved the open concept, but yet it wasn't just a big, large space. It was purposeful how he used each and every space. And this is also prevalent when you talk about his home. His original homestead that he had, it was designed as not only a home, but also as the barn and everything. So he had the chicken coop and the cow barn and the horse barn all attached to the home. And that all was an extension of the home, which was kind of a unique concept at that time. Then after he started taking students on, he took the chicken coop. It sounds kind of gross. Like I slept in the chicken coop, but he actually took the chicken coop and repurposed it into bedrooms. And so every space had a purpose, just like part of his concept. So he was able to reuse those spaces for a different purpose. So we talked real briefly. I alluded to the open layout as something that's important to him. Back in the day when he first started building and designing, Victorian architecture was by far the most popular architecture that you would see. And if you know a Victorian home, they're generally very tight, defined spaces. They're kind of smaller, narrow homes, maybe taller, and you know, the rooms tend to be small and very stuffed together with things, and you know, they're just tight and stuffy. Where his homes were very open, wide open, taller ceilings, bigger spaces, and not all the dividing walls in it. So he was really one of the first ones to create that open layout. And then he wanted that natural flow. That's another design concept that he had. He wanted spaces, and he creates movement within those spaces. So, for example, the home that I toured with the tall ceilings, it was very interesting because it wasn't just a vaulted ceiling. The ceiling would come up, and then there would be a notch in it with some glass in it. So as you're looking up the ceiling, you're not just looking up, oh, there's the point of the ceiling. No, you're kind of starting to look the way up the ceiling, and you're like, oh, look, there's some extra glass there, and that really brings the light in. And then as you're coming down the ceiling, he had some wood strips going down that created some movement. And then that came into another angle with the wall coming down, and then more glass. And it was just like everything just sort of connected to one another, and there was this flow as you looked around it. And I've been in a lot of homes, but I've never really seen anything quite like that, where it was just like the one element flowed to the next, to the next, to the next. And it was very, very intriguing how he did it. And yet at the same time, it never feel overdone. So he definitely has a very amazing talent for that. And he also, one of his design principles was that he loved to use new materials. So even though he wanted to use native materials, he was always trying to do new things, whether it was stained glass panels or decorative panels. If you look at some of the windows he used, the window designs, he had some really cool trapezoid windows. And then he had wood shutters that, you know, opened and closed in front of them. And lots of really cute and interesting ways to use things. He even had an area where they had an exterior wall, decided to add on to it, made a room above the existing floor, not all the way up like in the sense of a two-story, but he had some little stone steps that you walked up to, and they put a piano up there. And you're like, it was like an elevated piano. It was like maybe 5 feet higher than the rest of the home, and that was his little piano area. And again, that was the purpose was, then it had a little half wall above it, so you could see the person playing the piano. You really couldn't see the piano, but then you could hear the music. And again, that was him, you know, not only creating the flow, but the design with purpose. And then bringing the outside in, he used some of that outside area and brought it into the shape of the home. Just very interesting how he did that and the concept. And the last design principle that we want to talk about is what we call organic architecture. And one of the things that he was big on, besides bringing the outside in, was to really use light and bring as much light as possible into the home. So again, we talked about those large walls of glass, but also up in the rooftops. Now back in that time, you really didn't have glass skylights you could put in the roof. So his idea of a skylight was, you know, elevating a section of the roof a couple feet. He always liked those flat roofs too, of course. So he didn't have the big steep roofs that you would see. They were very flat. But he would bring up a section of roof, maybe 2 feet, and then would use that vertical section and put glass in it. And that would create a lot of beautiful light, and that would filter down. And so he not only used the position of the home on the lot, but then added glass in certain areas to illuminate different parts of the home and create some very beautiful light. And he also used the different elements within the home to move people from spaces. And that was another big thing that he believed in. So when you go into a Frank Lloyd Wright house, I keep adding more elements, sorry. But I said the last one and I've added two more. But one of the things that he did as well is he didn't want to have the entrance of the home be very obvious. So when you walked up to home, you weren't like, oh, there's the front door, I'm going to charge right into it. You always had to kind of go through an experience to get to the door. So usually you would be experiencing some of the architecture and maybe walk around or walk through something or an element, and then the door would be sort of around the corner, or it'd be under a roofed area. It wasn't always completely obvious, but you would find your way to it. Now, once you got into the door, like a foyer area, nowadays a lot of people make their foyers big and inviting. He did not believe in that. He wanted the foyer to be dark and small and close in and slightly uncomfortable. So you didn't want your guests hanging out in your foyer. You wanted them to kind of get in, take their shoes off, whatever it is they needed to do, and then move to the next part of the home and experience it. And it created feelings as you go through the house, because when you walk through that dark foyer, you're like, oh, I got to get out of here. I want to keep moving. And then all of a sudden you walk into this room and it just is wide open and tall ceilings and very inviting. And all of a sudden you're like, ah, I'm home, or I feel comfortable now. He did that on purpose. He created those feelings and he pushed you through the design of the home so that it made you move through different parts and spaces and have different feelings along the way. And that is probably one of the most amazing things that he did, was to use those spaces in such a purposeful way, right? Design with purpose, like we talked about earlier, to create this. So as you think about all these things, they're very interesting concepts. And this is what he taught his students, and he really hammered that home. So as you see plans that are Frank Lloyd Wright design plans, you have to understand that those are his concepts, but he may not necessarily have drawn that plan. So I think sometimes people have that misnomer that they think he drew every single plan that says Frank Lloyd Wright on it. That is not the case. His team or his students may have helped, but using his principles, and I'm sure he certainly looked them over, but that is something that he built as he added all these students on, and he created this academy, and he taught these principles to other people. Understand that, you know, there was many people at hand that drew a lot of these things, and this wasn't just something that he did. I'll leave you with one last kind of anecdote about Frank Lloyd Wright, which is pretty interesting. You know, he was an architect for many, many years, but his four most famous designs were all created within a four-year time span in his 70s. So that's kind of interesting, because he, you know, designed a lot of stuff, but the ones that he's most notable for were the ones that he did later in his life. And he sort of had this couple-year period in his life where he could do no wrong. And he even said, you know, he could shake ideas right out of his sleeve. And I think that's really fascinating to hear that. So keep that in mind. That's very interesting. The last thing that we'll say, and I thought this was a neat quote, and this is one of the last things I ended the tour with, and I thought it was really cool, is, you know, when you're talking about his buildings, and his buildings burned down several times, and he kind of joked, and he said, because when the buildings burned down, he was always worried about, you know, his plans and his drawings and his intellectual property. And of course, he built a safe, even a stone safe inside his home to protect all his work. And every single time that his building burned down, he never lost any of his works. So he joked that God may not have approved of his lifestyle, but he approved of his work. So kind of interesting, because one of the times the home got hit by lightning. So the home was somewhat destroyed, but all his work stayed intact. So very interesting concept, interesting fellow, great design, obviously a true pioneer of architecture. And it was really cool to tour his home in Taliesin and bring back some of these concepts for you guys. So if you enjoyed the podcast, please make sure to give it a 5-star rating and a brief comment about what you enjoy about Home Building Hero. We would appreciate it. Once again, thank you for tuning in to the Home Building Hero, broadcasting live from the Bellman Home Studio. If you haven't already, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content. Until next time, I'm David Bellman, signing off.